I'd say about 3 or 4 years old. I don't remember anywhere near exactly going for the first time, not at all. Oh, hello, Cornelius here. Cornelius Lysett with the latest episode of the Cornelius Cast. Hope you're well. No, I was just thinking that I first went racing aged 3 or 4, I suppose. I don't remember, but I'm sure it was to Hereford Racecourse, close to where I grew up. You looked out at the course, as you still do today, Hereford Cathedral and the city in front of you, the Black Mountain stretching into South East Wales over on the right-hand side, and driving to Hereford, acres of green, horsey country all around. So many good memories. I love the place. And when in December 2012 it closed, I have to say there were tears. There were tears as I drove away. But then tears of delight when Arena Racing Company, ARC, reopened it in October 2016. That was tremendous. And the fifth season back, can't believe it's fifth season back, is imminent as we record this. And the boss is with us, Rebecca Davis, Executive Director of Hereford and indeed of Worcester Racecourse. I think you've got the best, apart from Perth, I love Perth like I like Hereford. But I think you've got the best job in racecourse management, running a small course, part of the community, and you can sort of get on with it.
I agree, Cornelius. I love it here. Hereford's a fantastic course. It's got a great local following. Since 2016, when we reopened, we've just been putting all our energy into kind of rebuilding and regrouping and getting momentum behind us. It's just a shame that this year has almost been a wipeout.
Well, quite. How many fixtures did you lose at the end of last season?
Well, we lost actually 3 at the beginning this year due to unprecedented flooding. We were underwater, literally, kind of to the running rail, which we've never had here before. And then we lost 2 with coronavirus. So we've lost 5 this year. But actually, we're gearing up for next Tuesday when we can't wait. You know, disappointingly, there's no spectators. But that said, at least we're racing behind closed doors. And it'll be great to see some people on site again.
Yeah. How did you get nearly underwater? Because you haven't got a river, have you? Or a brook? Or you're actually in the city of Hereford.
Yeah, there is a brook in front of us. There's a housing estate that's being built opposite side of the Roman Road to us. So whether that's had an impact, we don't know. But it's just drains were bursting in February. There was just unprecedented rainfall and the drains just couldn't cope. So it was literally coming up out of the ground and it flowed like a river, actually down our back straight, pooled at the bottom. The local school flooded and Hereford as a whole was hit really bad actually in February. So we kind of went from one calamity to COVID.
Yes, because the River Wye does run through the centre of the city, doesn't it? And which is ironic, because I seem to remember when you reopened, there was a problem with the ground being too hard.
Well, we just recently invested last year. We finished investing in a 4,000 cubic metre reservoir actually to enable us to water, because historically at Hereford, we had a great relationship with the local chicken factory and we've still got a good relationship with them. But actually, their production has grown so much that we now can't have water from them because they need it for their own production plant. So we're in the curious position of actually not being able to water because the supply that we had from what was Sun Valley Chickens actually was no longer available. So we have actually built a reservoir. And probably one of my proudest moments so far is I think a lot of people previously have tried to get a watering system here at Hereford. For whatever reason, it didn't happen. But delighted to say we got it over the line. We have watered twice ahead of next Tuesday. But having had just over 62 mil of rain over the weekend, hopefully we put the rain guns away for this year at least.
But so at one stage, it was the story of the racecourse and the chicken factory, was it? You were having to share irrigation.
Very, very much. And what used to happen, I think years ago, one of the directors here was probably a director of Sun Valley and did a gentleman's agreement. And actually, the directors to this day are fantastic people, but it was just purely a business decision. As their production plant had got bigger, their own water supplies hadn't increased and they just couldn't release the water to us. And I don't blame them. You know, everyone's got to protect their own business. So there was no falling out, although I think the local paper tried to insinuate there was, but there was no falling out. We had lots of meetings, couldn't really work a way around it because we needed water and they did. So we built our own reservoir.
Not the media trying to find a falling out taking place.
Just very occasionally they try.
And how do you build a reservoir? Do you just dig until you find water?
Pretty much. We put a borehole in that basically goes very deep and drills and finds the water. And then that's pumped into the reservoir that we've built actually in the centre of the course. And we also use that water to water the golf course in the middle that we don't operate. So they use the water as well during the summer. and then we use it for the winter. Just to, really the idea of it is to prepare us for better ground at the beginning of the season and perhaps go a little bit later than we currently are into the kind of spring, summer in years to come.
And just loving the thought of how, this is not what we're meant to be here talking about today, how you'd go around with a sort of, what do you have, a stick? What do people have, sticks of some sort to try and work out? Well, water diviners. That's a lovely thought. Rebecca, the water diviner.
A company came in, actually, and the best way of doing it, if you know what you're doing, which I don't, I hasten to add, is basically a string with two bits of wood on, and they're walking around the middle, and when the two bits of wood cross, it means that there's a water supply deep down.
Really?
Yeah, I promise you.
It's that sophisticated.
Well, they also have more modern ways of doing it, but they do that as well to double check.
if nothing else today, I've learned how you find somewhere for water. You talked about behind closed doors, so it's going to be behind closed doors. It was behind closed doors when ARC staged most of the St. Ledger meeting, but you were actually there on the first day when it was there was a crowd trial. So what was that like? Because I've almost forgotten what a crowd at the races is like.
The first day of the Ledger, when there were spectators there, it felt eerily to me like Cheltenham on Gold Cup Day. I did 2 days at Cheltenham this year. I went on the Thursday and the Friday. We were all there, but perhaps almost knowing something bigger was coming, and was it right, was it wrong? That was kind of irrelevant, just that something was kind of brewing. And it very much felt like that on the Wednesday morning of Doncaster, that I think a couple of days before the government had announced new restrictions, and then surely enough, a couple of hours later, you know, we'd open gates. Lovely to see people. Everybody was in such good mood. They just complied with everything that was required. I was actually at the front gates, actually asking people to remember social distancing and explaining why we were kind of being so strict with it. And, you know, not one person had a bad word to say about anything. They were all just so delighted that racing was back on. And that evening, when we knew that there was no racing for the rest of the week, actually, there were people walking out in tears from the racing, just kind of devastated they couldn't come back. And it was a shame, because I think, you know, with Doncaster, a trial, and with what Warwick did recently with the trial with spectators, it's proved that I think that we can do it. I mean, I find it really bizarre, Cornelius. One of my sons is 7 years old, and his swimming lessons have just started in Rotton Wye, and I can go there on a Saturday morning, sit on the balcony of the swimming pool with no social distancing measures in between seats with a mask, and watch him swim, yet we can't welcome people through the doors, you know, for racing. But, you know, it's not for want of trying on behalf of the BHA and the RCA, who have been incredible. Let's just hope that, I don't know, something changes in the near future, whatever that is, that we can allow spectators. But at least we are racing as of next week, which is a great boost for the team here.
We're also not here to talk about swimming pools in Rotton Wye. Is that the one through the car? Is that the one through the car park?
Oh, you got it.
That's where. That's one of that's taken me back even further than Hereford Racecourse to my childhood, actually. So that day, from a corporate point of view, the trial was allowed for the whole of the 4 day St. Ledger Festival. Then there were change in regulations, and it would appear that the racecourse was the victim of timing, really, rather than anything else. The regulations changed right at the last minute in Doncaster. The council said they didn't want the racecourse to go through with the whole thing. Everyone worked themselves up for it. You know, but you said some of the crowd were in tears, and probably it's frustration as well that what the world is coming to at the moment. But what was it like amongst all of you lot?
For me, I was just stepping into it, so I don't think I can be too emotional about it. But I happened to be up in the main Doncaster office shortly after it was made public that we couldn't allow the crowds the rest of the time. And the team were just absolutely wiped out and gutted, because they had, you know, a lot of people had been furloughed, been brought back in to deliver the Ledger. It's a really challenging time at the minute for all race courses and staff. It's, you know, it is challenging, as you've heard from lots of race course people. And I think that just absolutely knocked them for six. However, you know, they did a great job. They still had to deliver the rest of the meeting behind closed doors, which they did brilliantly, and just regroup and move on is what they do best.
And I saw on Twitter that you gathered a bit of signage so that your children could impose social distancing measures in your home.
I did. I thought it'd be very clever to pinch load of 2 metre signage, which I did from the centre of the course. I went and took all the signage down in the centre of the course at Doncaster on the Thursday morning and loaded it all in my car. And on the Monday morning, the kids had put literally every almost metre. We had bright yellow and black 2 metre social distancing signage in every single room in the house. So I had to gather it up again.
Oh, right. And tell them what bubbles were, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
it is allowed. Though if Doncaster CID are listening, yeah, that's what happened to all that signage that went missing from the centre of the track. Get down to Hereford. So you say it's tough. And obviously you're upbeat about the season starting very soon. But so how tough? Because you're part of a group, so that's a plus. But you're small, which is a minus, and you're in an area which is not heavily populated, so that wouldn't appear to be a great... Well, you can't have crowds, I suppose, so maybe it doesn't matter. So how tough is it?
I think I'm very reassured that I work at a small race course that's owned by a larger group. You know, I do have concerns generally for some of the smaller courses, and I feel for them because it is... You know, we raced on Monday the 16th of March. The Tuesday it went behind closed doors, and the Wednesday racing stopped altogether. So we were the one of the last to race, and literally, Cornelius, since then... The site has almost been closed and mothballed. A significant number of staff across the business have been put on furlough, as they have, you know, across the industry. And actually, we've been ticking over, but with no income. And that's a challenge for us. The team are working their socks off now to get ready for next week. Morale has been low. There's a great buzz around the place now. Actually, it's starting to come together. We're seeing, you know, people on site. Things are happening for all the biosecurity and the measures we still have to put in place on site. But they, you know, they're worrying times, and I think that would be true for every single racecourse in Britain at the minute.
So the smaller ones that aren't members of, say Hereford wasn't part of the ARC Group, Arena Racing Company Group, would you be quite concerned for the future?
Yeah, I think I don't know what the financial arrangements are with any of the other racecourses and what their reserves are, but there's been no income basically, with the exception of media rights, Cornelius, which I know is, you know, is a hot potato. But with the exception of that, there has been no income. So, you know, whether it be annual membership, non-racing events, we normally have a very, very busy summer with, you know, fairs, weddings, you name it. That's all been cancelled. So we've still got all of our outgoings in terms of running the site and keeping it ticking over, but no incomings.
And were you insured against plague?
I don't believe so, no.
So you haven't been able to sort of dip into insurance reserves. And media, how many races will you be hoping to have at your early fixtures? Will you be having quite bumper cards?
Yeah, I think we're seven or eight races. We're able to stage that. You know, the one blessing, if there has been a blessing, is that actually the track is in fantastic condition because it wasn't over-raced in the winter because we barely raced. So actually we're able to... take lots of racing. We've got an additional fixture that's been transferred from Worcester on the 21st of October. And it'll be good now just to get going, Cornelius, welcome the horses and the jockeys back and see a few trainers and owners and just start ticking over doing what we enjoy. Because it's all about, as you've heard other people say, it, you know, what we do is put on an event, put on a show, and we love the buzz of a race day. And it's what makes us tick every day. And it's good that that's coming up again. It's just sad that there's no spectators with us.
So you're impresarios.
Yeah.
Producers. And your theatre happens slightly less often than the West End, or normally anyway. What about Worcester? Worcester lost its entire... So you were appointed executive director of Worcester, and have you had a race day yet?
No. Worcester had a very challenging year. It flooded six times in just over 12 months. And then we had probably one of the biggest floods there that we're aware of in February, where the track and the site was underwater for the best part of 4 weeks. That we almost came straight out of that, straight into kind of coronavirus lockdown. There's a significant amount of work to be done there from the flood recovery. And when there was no racing during the summer, we took the decision, which was purely a financial one, Cornelius, that actually the cost of putting the track back right for four or five fixtures in September and October wasn't one at this moment that we could stomach, because actually as a business we've been knocked hard by this. But actually, make no mistake, there is no hidden agenda here. Worcester will be back. We'll be racing from April. We're in the bidding for fixtures and we've got plans already for it. We'll be making what improvements we can and we're looking forward to it. So it's been a tough year for the team, or tough 18 months for the team at Worcester, because actually, as I say, they've had no show to put on at all.
So you're not just being diplomatic there. You do believe racing will return, because inevitably, you know what race courses are like, or in fact what racing people are like when they can't go to the races. They're on the phone muttering bits of gossip out of the corner of their mouths. And people have said, I wonder if it'll ever come back, Worcester.
I'd be as arrogant to say I know. I mean, certainly I'm, you know, running the course there, and the plan is very much to come back racing. I have heard absolutely nothing whatsoever to insinuate that it won't do, and we will be back racing. I actually, at the time, have spoken to half a dozen of Worcester's most supportive trainers that run most often, just to reassure them that actually, despite any rumour mills, we will be racing in 2021 and much beyond.
Oh, well, that's great to hear about Worcester, because you can imagine there's been a certain amount of gossiping about the whole thing. Just tell me, on the media rights, it works race by race, doesn't it? So if you have eight races, you do a bit better than if you have six races.
Yeah, that's a key thing for us. Actually, we're back racing Cool News, which is so important.
I was just thinking that if there'd been media rights on the 1st of May 1975, it would have been lucrative for Hereford, because Hereford Racecourse does have an appearance in the Guinness Book of Records as the longest fixture, the biggest fixture ever staged, 1st of May 1975, 14 races. Imagine being the executive director for 14 races rather than seven.
No, it's amazing, actually. So Major Verdin, who I happen to know, his family purely coincidentally. So Major Verdin was chairman here for a very long time.
Philip Verdin, very well-known character.
It was under his watch that they had 14 race courses, and he then received a letter from the then Jockey Club summoning him to wherever it was then, asking him to explain why he felt the need to stage 14 race courses. So my understanding from Major Verdin's son is that Major Verdin went to London on the said date and basically said, well, why not? People wanted to run. So we just thought we'd keep running. And actually no more came of it. But I think after that was when they started looking at having a maximum number of races per day.
Yeah, which was eight. Now, this will challenge you. I've got a quick quiz question for you. How many horses do you think were required for 14 races? If you were doing it into spread betting, would you go high or low on 180?
Lower.
Ooh. Are you good at spread betting?
No, clearly not.
There were 219 horses.
Were there really? Wow.
And now, how many jockeys do you think were required for 219 horses? Do you want to go high or low on 80?
I'm going to go lower again, Cornelius.
Well, I'll tell you what, I wish I was your bookmaker. 116 jockeys were required.
Wow.
And I was very pleased to when having a quick sort of research on that matter, a jockey who was a big favourite of mine, a proper tough jump jockey called Sandy May. He had most of the most rides that day. And there were four champion jockeys riding that day. Now you can turn this on me and say, who were they? Well, Bob Davis was one, who was a champion jockey. Tommy Stack, who rode Red Rum Latterly, he was riding that day. I think John O'Neill probably rode that day as well. And trying to think who the other one. Oh, John Frankham would have been riding. Do you know, they did it in two bits. So because originally it was an evening meeting on the 1st of May that year. But when they suddenly had 219 entries, so they divided one race. Then they decided, look, all these horses want to run in novice chases. Let's put on a few more novice chases. And they started at 1:30. And had seven races, 1:32, 2:33, 3:34, 4:30. Then they had a break and they started again at 5:30, which was, and I think Graham Good, who was a legend, you remember Graham Good as a legendary commentator on ITV and Channel 4.
Yeah.
He was in charge. I think they reluctantly allowed him an assistant. But I do find that amazing that does probably say something about the way racing was run in the 1970s, that instead of saying, well done, guys, you've got through it all, get up here and explain yourself, Major Verdin.
No, absolutely. He was an incredible chairman for the racecourse at that era. And actually, we have a bar here now that when we reopened, I kind of converted a little bar into an area called The Major, which is just a fun little tribute to him, because I think, you know, his commitment to the racecourse was extraordinary, and his standing within the local community was huge as well. And there was a real following here because of him. And actually, it's great to see Timbo, his wife, still comes occasionally when she's able to, Jimmy, his son, and that. And it's lovely just to see that kind of Verdin interest in Hereford racecourse continuing, and may that continue for a long time to come.
And he was a very distinctive character, because I assume during the war, I think he was an MC or something, or he'd got a good decoration, but he'd also, sadly, he'd lost one of his eyes. So he had a patch over one eye, but that didn't stop him doing anything. And I think they had he was chairman of the racecourse, wasn't he? I think they had the chairman is 80 race. They might've even had the chairman is 90, but he was always, you know, he was always keen to get people to the races, etc. And I suppose it was, you know, it was a great part of the community then, and maybe it just fell off slightly when the numbers dwindled, and ultimately it was closed in those dark days of what do we say, 2012. Was it just dwindling crowd wise? Was that one of the reasons?
I think so.
A dispute over a lease as well, wasn't there?
There was a lot of issue with the negotiation with Heritage Council over the lease. And I have to say, we've got a really great relationship with them now. We're just starting the process of negotiating a longer lease with them. So we've got 8 years left on our lease, and we're looking at, you know, 100 years plus, which I hope, again, reassures everyone that, you know, we're here to race and we're here to stay at Hereford. That's what's been really challenging this year. All that momentum we'd gained over the last 4 or 5 seasons just almost came grinding to a halt in March. But it was the same for many, many people. But it's been a big exercise here, actually, since reopening, in terms of rebuilding people's confidence and trust. I think they were let down when the racecourse closed. It was very acrimonious, and I think it was quite painful for a lot of local businesses, perhaps, that might have had money invested here and things. So it's been a slow burn at times, but actually, again, the team have done a great job of building and nurturing these relationships with local Herefordshire businesses. And it's something that I'm really keen here, that we really invest in Herefordshire where we can as well. So all of our contracts, where we're able to, we put locally. And the great thing actually about racing next week is we've put some very small contracts with a marquee company, signage company, Harris Fencing and Crowd Barriers. And one of those companies said actually it's the first confirmed order they'd received this year.
So you are part of, you see yourself as part of the community?
Yeah, very.
Because there
much
aren't
so.
A lot of people, are there? Am I right in saying Herefordshire is the most underpopulated or least populated county in Britain, or yeah, in England anyway? In England, probably.
That's a stat. Yeah, that's a stat that's been thrown at me.
Is it more cows than people?
Yeah, probably.
More sheep than people.
Well, there's a few sheep around. You don't stumble upon Hereford. It's not on a big commuter route. You have to kind of be coming for a reason almost to get here. But actually, I think having lost the football club and the racecourse at the same time, both reopening actually at the same time, I think that classic saying that you don't appreciate what you haven't got until you haven't got it. And I think there's a real sense of support for the racecourse that we have seen kind of grow over the last 4 or 5 years. And we will plan to keep continuing to do that, because we do, you know, we immerse ourselves in the local business community deliberately so, and hopefully that will reap its reward in years to come.
And just remind us what happened with the football club, because famous football club, when it was non-league in the 70s, it was a famous cup tie, wasn't it? Beat Newcastle, knocked them out of, who were huge at the time, or even bigger than they are now at the time. And then they climbed up the Football League, I think, and then went back down and then went out of business, did they?
Pretty much, almost coinciding with when the racecourse did, various stories around the football club, none of which I know if are true or not, but fell on bad times, couldn't make it pay, couldn't make it work, so the doors were closed there. And actually, they have a great team there, and we work very closely with them. You know, we've had a fundraising charity race day where all the footballers came. They took the restaurant and things. So it's working with places like that that you could view as competition on the one hand, but actually we can complement each other. We can promote ourselves to the football fans and vice versa. So what we're trying to do is just, you know, work side by side with local businesses rather than perhaps view local businesses as direct competition.
So poor old Herefordshire to lose two big sporting bodies, the football club and the racecourse, at the same time. That was a kick in the teeth, because, you know, there isn't masses to do. So that really was bad news.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, our fixtures are really key to us calling this. At the minute, we only have two or three weekend fixtures, which is our chance to put Hereford on the map locally, because, you know, wet Monday afternoon in November, January isn't the most appealing to lots of people. So, you know, we're working quite hard to, you know, secure the lease of the racecourse so that we can then really invest in some really good weekend fixtures and try and get those crowd levels up to some decent numbers. Because actually, before the racecourse closed, it had some whopping days, which, if we could get back up to those levels, would be fantastic. But actually, since then, everyone's gone and found other things to do. They found other ways to spend the money. So we've got to try and re-engage with new people and those people that we've lost.
Whitsun Bank Holiday, that used to be massive when I was a child. Yeah. And the cars used to be spread all the way along the home straight and all the way along the corner going out towards the far side of the track.
Yeah, and that's our, and Boxing Day here used to be massive as well. We have December Saturday, that's a really good fixture. And our Ladies' Day is the Saturday before Cheltenham. And that's a really strong fixture for us. And it's just that mix of really getting commercially friendly fixtures where we can really go out to town and promote, you know, greater attendances with the balance of traditional grassroots jumping, which is what we're known for. It's a great track here. A lot of trainers run here because it's deemed, I believe, as a fair and a genuine track.
And numbers wise, you could always do with more bums on seats, obviously, particularly at the moment, obviously. But when things are normal, are bums on seats OK?
Yeah, I mean, our weekend fixtures are really well supported. Some of our midweek ones are less so. But actually, let's be realistic. As I said, you know, a wet Monday in the depths of winter, you've got to be a real hardcore jump racing fan. And there's not that much to do here other than obviously just be that purist and join the racing, but it's certainly going the right direction, Cornelius.
And you talked about it as a race course. In the one hand, in people's minds, Hereford, gaff. You know, they use that awful dismissive phrase, it's a gaff track. But on the other hand, if you actually look at the history, you know, years ago, again, going back to my youth, the Dickinson family, who were these big trainers, Michael Dickinson, who's still around, and his parents both trained as well, and they trained a lot of very good horses. And I remember Bregorn, I think, in the year that he won the Cheltenham Gold Cup, I think came to Hereford. Silver Buck was another Gold Cup winner, I think might have come at some point. They like the fact it's a sort of flat, fair, not a lot of hard luck stories, are there?
No, there aren't. And as I say, it's lovely to see and actually seeing the novice horses come through. And it's always great to follow those throughout the season, you know, to the bigger spring festivals and beyond. So it's something that we're quite proud of here, that actually the small role that we can play in the stepping stone of a horse's career, actually.
And Gay Brief. I think Gay Brief might have had his prep race before he won the... Gosh, I'll tell you what, I'm sounding like something out of the Dark Ages with horses from yesteryear. But I can remember Gay Brief certainly running. And I think it was the year that he won the champion hurdle, trained by Mercy Rymel. And Mercy and Fred Rymel, they trained not far away. And you've got a decent, in terms, put your potential fans to one side for a moment. But in terms of your potential characters on the stage, you've got a lot of local jumping trainers.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. I mean, first of all, Richard Johnson, he's born, bred Herefordshire, loves Herefordshire, lives Herefordshire, and there's nothing I don't think he wouldn't do if we asked him at Hereford. I mean, Rusty Bridge, our main restaurant, that's named after Richard's first ever winner that was owned by his grandfather and trained by his mum. And then, you know, Venetia, Kerry Lee, Tom Simmons, there's no end of trainers actually locally. And something I'm looking at trying to get up and running, when I was at Cheltenham Racecourse, we introduced the Gloucestershire Trainers Championship. And I want to do something like that for Herefordshire, just really to raise the profile of Herefordshire trainers, because actually we've got a strong bunch of trainers in this area that perhaps sometimes might not be seen as a top echelon, but they're going to fire out some winners throughout the season.
Yeah, and I remember going back to the Dark Ages again, I remember when we got the copy of Horses in Training, this just fascinating book that used to come once a year with all the trainers with the horses they had. Not only were there the Venetia Williamses and the Kerry Lee size trainers around, but there were a lot of people, and there are probably not quite so many of these type of people around these days, but people who trained 1, 2, 3 just of their own horses. Remember, there was a guy called Richard Barrett who trained very near us where I grew up, but and lots of others as well. Yeah, it's good horsey country, isn't it?
It's proper. Great, and it's lovely, actually. What I really enjoy here on a race day is seeing the amount of people that stand around the pre-parade ring and watch it, and I always think, actually, that's proper horse racing people, and that's not to diss people that don't do that, but I think, actually, our pre-parade ring is almost busier than our parade ring with people looking on.
Love that. It actually, I was looking at the history, it started as flat racing, but then it would appear to be the case that those chaps and ladies around Herefordshire who like riding over the hedges and following the hounds, etc., they weren't much into flat racing. They wanted what they would have called proper racing.
Proper jumping. And actually, 2021 is 250th anniversary year of Hereford Racecourse.
Oh, right.
Now, there's lots to be argued. Well, you know, we didn't race in the war. We didn't race for the 4 years when it closed. But actually, you know,
forget that.
Time, I'd be looking for something quite big in terms of celebrating it. But I think let's get through this year. And I very much hope that when the opportunity allows next year, we can do a really good celebration of 250 years of Hereford Racecourse.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. It was a bit like the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. Was technically, I think, the 98th or 99th, but I resolutely, in everything I wrote, said the 100th birthday of the great race. You mentioned, Rebecca, you were at Cheltenham before. I think you were at Wincanton. Have you been other places as well?
No, mainly I did 16 years at Cheltenham, of which most of those were under Edward Gillespie, and actually Edward that encouraged me to train as a clerk of the course. And whilst I was at Cheltenham, I did 5 years clerking at Wincanton, which is the best thing that ever happened to me in my career, because it was a real opportunity to get to know the core product, which is growing grass and where the horses go round. And I had a fantastic head groundsman, David Cartwright, used to be a jockey.
Oh, yeah, used to be a jockey, yeah.
Could be the most awkward, cantankerous guy, but my goodness me, he was the best in the business at his job. And I remember, you know, trying to suggest that we should water at Wincanton. You know, it was hard. Well, there's nothing wrong with my hard ground. I used to race on hard ground when I was jockeying. I would always walk away and go, oh, God, is he going to water his knees? Is it going to be rock hard? And he always did. He just made life a bit tricky. But I had so much respect for him. And I think, I hope vice versa. And his his and his wife Penny's Christmas card is the one that I look forward to receiving every year, because it's a proper handwritten note in his card to me and vice versa, where we just share what we've been doing over the past year. And he was a master of his trade, and it was a great time down there.
And so you were at Cheltenham for all those years. On the eve of the goal of the Cheltenham Festival, that must have been hugely exciting. But actually, now your hand is firmly on the tiller. You're running the show at a quite different race course, even if it's not that far away. Is this just as exciting?
Very much so. And funny enough, when I left Cheltenham, I was on maternity leave actually from Cheltenham when I moved across to Hereford in June 2016 to kind of start the challenge of reopening and rebuilding it. And a few people said, well, why have you gone from like the mecca of jump racing to a gas track Hereford, if you want? But actually, the thrill and the buzz actually of being in control and being responsible for it and making the decisions and actually taking the glory and taking the grief as well. There's plenty of grief, you know, when you don't get it right. And just for me, it's the whole challenge of reopening the racecourse. And I never forget speaking to Michael Caulfield, who said, you know, you're part of history here, because sporting venues do not reopen. When they close, they just never reopen. And it just hit home that I'd been given an amazing opportunity to play a very small part in, you know, history of racing. And I love it. We've got a great team here, and it's a real privilege to be doing what I'm doing.
Mm. And you mentioned Richard Johnson. Peter Scudamore came from Herefordshire as well. And Richard Dunwoody, he launched himself on the world. Richard Dunwoody, great champion jockey of the 1990s, with a five-timer at Hereford, I think it was. He rode a lot of winners, won bank holiday fixture at Hereford. So, you know, it's Hereford 2.5, the rest nil in terms of producing champion jockeys. And you mentioned Rusty Bridge, which is the restaurant. I remember Ivor Johnson, Richard Johnson's grandfather, who owned that. And then Keith, his father, and Sue, his mum, they trained it. Ivor Johnson was IK Johnson Bridge Sollers.
Yeah.
He appeared on the race card, being based in that particular village. And he's helped you, hasn't he? And just because you've had to do a bit of special layout for the jockeys when you start behind closed doors. So his restaurant, they won't be having that lovely beef. They'll be weighing themselves and changing colours in there. Is that right?
That's right. I think poor Richard's probably going to get a bit of grief, because all around the restaurant there's various little anecdotes about him and pictures when he was a child. And somebody said, "You're going to take them down." I thought, "No, I'll leave them up, and all the jockeys can rip them to pieces." About it. So, but no, we've had to move the weighing room, the changing rooms, across to Rusty Bridge because of social distancing. And he's been a great help again on the end of the phone, called in just to have a look at a few things. And that's what's, I mean, he's so approachable, I'm sure, for everybody. But we're very lucky to have him on our doorstep, and nothing's too much trouble for him. It's quite interesting hearing you talk about Peter Scudamore. On the end of one of our grandstand walls, Darren Birdie did a caricature of Herefordshire racing characters for me. So I knew it was a can of worms. So I put it out on social media saying, you know, who would you vote for in terms of who you would associate with typical Herefordshire jump racing, of which the Scudamore name came up. So I actually spoke to Tom Scudamore, and Tom said, actually, really, when Dad was at his most successful, he wasn't really in Herefordshire. He was based down in Somerset with Martin Pipe. So he said, actually, I think probably Granddad Michael Scudamore and brother Michael are more immersed in Herefordshire than Dad was. So we didn't do Peter Scudamore on this caricature. We had Venetia and Richard Lee, Michael Scudamore Senior, Junior. And needless to say, we got a bit of abuse on social media because we'd missed out Peter Scudamore. But I said, actually, this was on the Scudamore's request, actually, that they wanted Michael Senior and Junior to be associated more with Hereford than Peter.
All right. And Michael, as well as being a successful jockey based in Michael Senior, a successful jockey based in Herefordshire, trained just outside Ross-on-Wye, and Michael Junior now trains at a different place just outside Ross-on-Wye as well. No, I like that thought. I think Peter was once, I think he has been a director of the race course as well. And I do remember that he and Richard Johnson were involved with me with one of your charitable things. We staged an event to mark the reopening to raise money for the Brilliant St Michael's Hospice near Hereford. And I'm just looking at your, I'm going to give you a chance to plug it in a second, looking at a couple of your race names for the fixture that's the first fixture of the season. You've got Ask the Loud One If They're Okay, Mare's Hurdle, and Stand Up to Sigma, Maiden Hurdle. So you're in with a mental health charity, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so actually dealing with a lady there called Alice Linley, who ironically is Richard Linley's daughter, senior BHA course inspector.
And former jockey.
Known Alice on and off for a long time, and she worked at Cheltenham when I was there, and she moved on as to die, and she now works for the organisation and had reached out to me probably 6 or 9 months ago about saying, are there things we could do together? And it's all aimed really, Cornelius, at raising awareness about the information and the support that's out there for people in Herefordshire and Worcestershire struggling with mental health issues. And I think, you know, racing was rocked by some sad deaths this year. You know, for too long now, it's been a stigma that possibly still is that people don't talk about it. So we're just trying, you know, through the race titles and some other stuff, just trying to reach out to people, say that actually, you know, there is absolutely no shame reaching out and getting support, because there is support out there and more people tend to have those needs now.
I hope the Stand Up to Stigma, it's such a great name for a race. I hope that the commentator mentions it a lot of times. It gets a lot of mentions in the media leading up to it. And I hope there are lots of entries for the Stand Up to Stigma Maiden Hurdle and the Ask the Loud One If They're OK Mayor's Hurdle, which I think is probably even more poignant, actually, than the Stand Up for Stigma. You know, just because you're noisy and gregarious, it doesn't mean to say that you haven't got issues that you're trying to hide. No, that's great. Well, look, good luck with the season. So you're the executive director at Hereford and Worcester. People gossip about these race courses and you're full of optimism, etc., about everything going forward. Is that what I'm taking from all this?
Very much so. Actually, you know, we're about to start the season at Hereford, and God willing, when we start the season at Worcester next season, there'll be spectators there. But either way, both race courses will be up and running 2020, 2021, and we're here to build them both and make sure they're here for a long time to come.
And you even look excited. As well as sounding excited.
I am. I love it. I'm very lucky. I love my job.
Well, excellent. Well, look, best of luck with the season. Congratulations on the way it's gone over the last four seasons, and now we're, I think, into the fifth season back. Let's see some more champion jockeys from Herefordshire, so that wall has to be, you have to cram a few more caricatures onto that wall. And I think you ought to get on to Peter Scudamore and say, you may train in Scotland, but you and your partner, Lucinda Russell, get down here.
Absolutely.
And then you might get a caricature on the wall. Excellent. Look, best of luck with the season, and thanks very much indeed for chatting to us. Thank you to you as well for listening. Please subscribe and then you'll never miss an episode, and spread the word. If you've enjoyed this, please tell your friends and maybe give us a review as well, so that we can expand the Cornelius cast, and we'll speak again soon. Thanks for listening.